Okay, good. So the Gemara says, Tani, Nitia. Okay, so one of the keys here is the distinction between Nitia and Zakein. Right, where a Nitia has a Chomra and a Kulav, right, which is you can plow all the way till Rosh Hashanah, but only if there are Eser Nitiot, or Beiskena, you can only, right, you have the lesser, right, the numbers, right, 3 to 9, etc. But it's not part of the magic, Halach al Moshe Mishinai, of Ad Rosh Hashanah. Okay? Right? So I think probably the footnote summarizes it for you, right? But we have two, right, differences, right? A steilan, right, right, trees get the kulot of a steilan that is mutter even after Pesach, unlike a steilavan. But still, you only have until Atzeret, but not the Rosh Hashanah, right? So that's, right, so if we remember, steilavan, right, a grain field you have until Pesach, a steilan you have until Shavuot, and Nitio you have until Rosh Hashanah, but that's only Eser Nitiot, right? Okay. So the Gemara then says that a Nitia, these young, right, trees, Me'ein Eser. Uskeina me'ein shalosh. So what does that mean? What does that mean? So nitiya, you need, to get the kula of nitiya, you need 10. And as keina, you can get the kulot and the status of an ilan as long as you have 3. But then the Gemara challenges it. Ita chame. This one's a bit broken. What if you have a young tree that looks like an old tree? Meaning, yeah, right, that's the way it's understood by the majority of the Mefarshim, right? So if you see, for example, in the Rosh Cirilio, Shalosh Nitiyot Osin Kikar Atunlin Kizgena Dechorshin Kol Beizah Bishvilan. So, if you have 3 nitiot, but they produce as much as is kena, so then you have the heter that you can plow the entire field. But the Gemara says, if that's the case, at no din lak is kena, so how could you say the end, ad amar nitiya zumein eser? Meaning what? Right, at the end it says, right, that you still need 10, right? So what does it mean? So Amar Rav Chuna, Mao Mein Eser, She'ein Nitia Me'ein Shalosh. So the Gemara, the simple pshat is to distinguish between time and exactly, right? So he says, this is what it is. If you have a nitiya which produces a lot, so then what's the halacha? You still need 10. However, you have to stop working when Shavuot, right? So it has a double chumrah, right? On the one hand, it's like a nitiya, and therefore you need 10 for this to be called a state ilan of nitiot, right, to be an orchard of saplings. But because it produces so much, right, it no longer is at the point where it needs you to work it all in the way until Rosh Hashanah. No, you can't. Now, why would this be true? Well, Well, let's look at, there are different perushim here, but why would you say this, okay? Well, fine, let's look at a different perushim before we do it outside. Fine, so the Marafolda says, Kikar harein kishalosh skin, sorry, Mal main esther, sheni tiam main shalosh, lo tamar shalosh nijon sheno, so kikar harein kishalosh skin of itin la beitza'a, ulin beitza'a no mar, velo linyan rosh shana. Di be'emet ein chor sheno talikin skin od ara aseret. No, I just said, you can only do it until Shavuot. V'ha'adam remain eser, linyan beitza'a. V'ha'chikam, this is how you read it. Shalo tomar shalosh nitiot, shoso nengi shalosh skenot, if you have three nitiot, that produce like skenot, shoso v'itein l'shalosh beitza'a. Dafka, sarala beitza'a, you can't just give it a beitza'a for three. Kishalosh skenot, avalach rosh, that's very too low, but we do take the chumrah, right, that you can only do it until Shavuot. Yeah, right, right, and this is what it says. If you have an old one which looks like a sapling, therefore needs more work so it doesn't dry out and die, we give you the heter roshana, the gomer main shalosh, hainu litin ladin nitiya. But we don't require 10. Right, so what does he say? He says, what is this me'ein? Okay, what, as the Marfold understand it, he says that the real rule is as follows. In order to figure out how many trees you need per field, to define it as a field rather than individual trees, what do we go by? In order to figure out whether you need 3 or 10, old or young, in order to figure out whether you have to stop at Shavuot or go to Rosh Hashanah, what do we look at? How much it produces. What's the logic? Right, why is it that, what? Right, why is it, right, because normally, right, normally, nitiyah produces less, right, and therefore, it needs more work, and it needs 10 per field until Rosh Hashanah. And an older tree produces more, and therefore, but is more established, and therefore you stop plowing it at Shavuot, but you can plow an entire field, entire orchard, even for only 3 well-producing trees. But if we have a mix and match, right, where you have a nitiyah that produces a lot, or a skenah that doesn't produce so much, so then we say, according to Marafolda, that in terms of how long you can work the field, we go by how much it produces, right? But in terms of how many trees you need per field, we go by age. Why would you say that? What's the logic of splitting these two? And therefore?
And therefore, as long as they're still behaving like teos, that means that we need to plow more for them. But if they're already, it seems like established enough that they can produce as much of the that means that we should need to plow for them.
Right, right. Meaning, right, the simple shot seems to be, listen, in the end of the day, nitiyot need more frequent work to keep them alive, but they don't have as much, their branches aren't as deep, they don't spread out as much in the field, and therefore, they don't need as much geographic expansive work, right? Meaning what it's really saying is, listen, there's two things going on here. In terms of what percentage of the field you're allowed to plow, what matters is how old the tree is. Because a young sapling has short branches, and therefore, even if you need to work it every day, you only need to work it around the tree. In order to permit working the entire field, what do you need? A lot of them, right? Because then a lot of... Exactly. But when it comes in terms of how much you have, I mean, not how much spatially, but how frequently, meaning do I stop working it, right, at Shavuot or at Rosh Hashanah, what's the standard? Right, how much they produce. Because the more they produce, the more... No, it's by how established it. When something's already producing a lot, right? When something's already producing a lot, it's pretty established in that sense. Right? Correct. Now, it might not be true, but that does seem to be what it's saying. Now, right, if you look at the Mepharshim, you'll see that right, now there are other girsaot here. Right? There are other girsaot. You want to give me the English for a second, because if I read it to you in Hebrew, it won't help. Right? But unless you guys want to really, really like kill ourselves, right? Right? They note here a nice little summary, and they say, listen, right? In summary, okay, based on Marafolda, what comes out, productive saplings are subject to both stringencies. A, for one to be allowed to plow the entire Beit Sa'ah, there must be 10 saplings present, and B, plowing is forbidden after Shavuot. Unproductive mature trees are subject to both leniencies. For one to be allowed to plow the entire Beit Sa'ah, only 3 are required, and plowing is permitted up until Rosh Hashanah. Yes? But this is the view of the Marafolda and Pnei Moshe. However, Gra reaches the exact opposite conclusion, right? And productive saplings are subject to both leniencies, while unproductive mature trees are subject to both stringencies. Now, what's the logic? Again, I can read you the Hebrew one. I think it looks like it's longer here. But I'll read it to you in the English. The Ziv HaYam raises a number of problems the Marafolda's approach, right? Which Kovi already has problems. A. The Mishnah Gimel rules that if a tree is unfit to produce 10 of them, must be present in order to permit plowing the entire Beit Sa'ah. Right? This runs counter to Marafolda, who asserts that just 3 suffice. Right? Meaning, remember how much time we spent on trees that don't produce enough? Which means that production is important. Right? Right? So Marafolda solves this difficulty by limiting the Mishnah to mature trees that are too small to produce, whereas large ones are treated more leniently. This solution is hard to accept because the Mishnah seems to refer to all types of unproductive trees. And B, Marafolda holds that a productive sapling is subject to both stringencies. Logic, however, dictates that saplings should, even productive ones, should be treated leniently. And C, according to Marafolda, there is no need for the Braisa to add the word me'ein. It could have just said Nitiya Eser. Right? Nitiyot only require 10, not like 10. Right? Like 10, by which we mean exactly 10. Right? That's a very weird thing. And therefore, the Gra understands it differently. Right? So if you want to look at the Gra inside, right? You want me to read the summary first and then we'll read the Gra inside? Or do you want to just read the summary?
What was like saying it needs about that much?
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. Right. So what the Gra does, he says, me'ein doesn't mean that, right? It means like this. He says, Nitiyash Yenerik is not a notin lakis kena. If a sapling produces as much as a mature tree, you treat it like a mature tree, meaning that a productive sapling is treated as a mature tree only in the sense that just 3 are required in order to permit plowing the entire field. What's the logic? Because how much of the field you need to plant, right, according to the Gra, is based on how much it produces. Because the more it produces, the more nutrients it's drawing from the ground. And therefore, a young tree that produces a lot, then... Correct. But what does Nitiya Menein Esther mean? It does not mean that you need 10. What does it mean? That if you have 3 saplings that produce a lot, then you only need 3 to permit it as an orchard, but you're still allowed to do it until Rosh Hashanah. Why not? Sorry, why are you allowed to do it until Rosh Hashanah? Why aren't you stopped at Shavuot? Well, why is it doubly lenient? What's the logic of the Gra? The Gra is basically saying that, listen, a very productive sapling, you only need 3 and you still get the kula of Rosh Hashanah, meaning it's doubly lekula. What's the logic? Because how much space you give it is based on how much nutrients it's drawing. And how frequently, or how, right, until what point you do it is based on how established it is.
Which should be the same thing.
No, right? Because think about it. Even if something is super productive, right, that means it's drawing a lot of nutrients. Right? And therefore, 3 super productive nitiyo, the Gra says, you plow the entire field because it's clearly drawing a lot of nutrients.
That goes against nature to say that nitiyo could be
But if that's the reality, if the Netziah is producing a lot, then he says, clearly it's growing a lot of nutrients, you need to plow the entire field. But nevertheless, it's still fragile because it's new. It's an uber-producing, but still fragile fruit, and therefore it has double kulot. Right? Meaning you're allowed to work it for longer because it can't survive without work.
That's what I'm thinking.
Right. Double the kulot. That's what he's saying. He's saying, if you happen to have a magical, right, you have Jack's magic beanstalk, right? It produces a lot and it's taking a lot of nutrients, but nevertheless, it's quite fragile, right? I don't know if that's true. Maybe it wasn't fragile. Maybe it was part of the magic was it wasn't fragile. I don't know. Exactly. Right. That's what the Gra basically comes out with, right? Unlike Amar Fulda. Okay? What's clear, according to all these sheets, is basically you need to distinguish, right, between what drives the right, how much of this geographic area can be plowed, and how long, how frequently, right, how much work needs to be put in it. What the Gra is basically saying is, listen, newer trees, no matter how much they produce, require more work, because they're more fragile, right? But how much of the field you're allowed to produce is based on how much nutrients it's drawing, right? And therefore, you can have both kulot, right? That's how the Gra understands. There are other perushim. You can look through the mafarshim. You'll see there are other possibilities, but let's leave it at that, right? The Mara Fulda and the Gra, which is the opposite, okay? The next two lines, I will tell you right now, if you really want to, we can try to understand it, but it is a little bit of a nightmare. No, I'm sorry. This one's actually not so bad. It's not easy, but fine. Tzadek hanim nidone kesei tru'a. A field of reeds is treated like grain, okay? And therefore, you only have until Pesach. Then the Gemara says, Rabbi Avo, B'shem Rabbi Yosef, Barchanina, B'satayim Shanu. What is B'satayim Shanu? Yes, right? Meaning, even though a normally, what defines a stay lavan, how big is it? One sa'ah. If it's reeds, it's two sa'ah. Now, someone tell me how to read that. Two sa'ah what?
Two
fields, what? Two sa'ah what?
What does it mean by reeds? Like, what's
it? Reeds.
To be able to plow a field of reeds, you need to have you'd think that if it's just filled up in one day, you would be able to plow it, but now apparently you need to see it for the amount of just 2 days.
Okay, so
you can
First I'll tell you the way Pnei Moshe understands it. Pnei Moshe says as follows, and I think this is what Ellie said before, right? Which is, listen, it's reeds are treated like a stei lavan, like grain, in the sense that you only get until Pesach. But for grain, in order for it to be called a field, a sufficient amount of grain needs to be packed into one field. But kanim, right? But kanim
can be
spaced out more. Okay? Right? That it can be spaced out more.
Much more in a
base cell
than
we
do on an entire
base cell.
You're saying there's
space out.
Yeah, right. Now,
So why wouldn't we just say...
Now, okay. You know what? No, this is... Okay. There is a major problem here. Okay? There's a major problem in this Gemara. Do you guys look at the Mefarshim here? There's a major problem in this Gemara, which is that the girsa in the Braita is different, or in some versions of the Tosefta, which is, Stei kanim nidonin kinitzi'ah. Right? In some versions it says that steikanim are like tfu'a, and some says it says it's like a nitia, right? Which is obviously the opposite extreme, because kisei tfu'a means that you have till Pesach. Kisei nitia means Rosh Hashanah. So that's what everyone wants to try to figure out. So okay, so look at the Mefarshim. See, this is an important educational lesson, right? One of the key things you need to know about Yerushalmi is Yerushalmi builds on the Tosefta. But that creates problems because, as you've learned by this point, Yerushalmi has many, many Girsa issues. But guess what else has many Girsa issues? The Tosefta! Yay! Right? So what could you do? First of all, you could say that it's a machloket. Right? That the Tosefta treat reads like a nitya, right? And therefore at Rosh Hashanah, and the Yerushalmi says Shua. Now I will note that some people had different girsa in the Tosefta also, which only makes this worse, right? But everyone, all of them first, try to figure it out. So let's look at them inside, okay? Look at the Pnei Moshe. Say kanim nidonid kistei tvua b'tosefta sham hishnuya. First of all, he changes the girsa in the Tosefta so that it matches this one. Uklomar, Dimnata Kanim Besadeshit Galuvit Avukai Damin Lael, Merik Bab did the Maya Shoshin Kane, Nidonin Kesechua. You planted reeds so they get big and thick. You treat it like a stage walk in the church Ravo Bisatim Shanu. And how do you treat it? Klomar. Shidina Kaste Lavan Dismana Ara Pesach. It is treated as a stay lavan until, meaning you can plow until Pesach. Vilo Kaste Ilan the Shura Bishlojan Vesa El Afisatayim. But that's even if it's spread out in Satan. We shouldn't do a stay long, Sunday. Okay? So Marafulda says differently. He has the girsa. The opposite, which is like nitia, which means that reeds get until Rosh Hashanah. He's even near it. He says it's true that the Braita and the Yerushalmi say opposite things, but they're not arguing. Why not? He says, Masha Amar Khan Bistefu Ara Pesach, Mayri Binituim Asara Bistatayim to the Mukila Rabbi Avo, the Fichach Dina Kiste Lavan, Vatosefta Mayri Asara Levet Sa'ah, Vinidonim Kinitia. So he says, this is how you read them together. If you, in fact, pack a lot of reeds into the size of a Beit Sa'ah, then what? Then when you put so many reeds in one field, right, packed into a little Beit Sa'ah, it needs a lot of work. Like what? Like nitiot. Like young saplings. And therefore, it's going to be mutter until Rosh Hashanah. But if you spread out the reeds in a space of a satayim, then they need less work. And therefore, until Pesach, it's like a stei lavan. Right? And therefore, he says, they're describing two different cases. When it says b'satayim, it means if you spread them out, so then it needs less work, and you can finish at Pesach. But if you pack them together into a sa'ah, then it needs work for a longer period of time, like nitio. And he said, what we're dealing with is, why are we even comparing reeds to trees? In what way are they at all like trees? So he says, we're dealing with a reed with a lot of reeds come out of them. Right? And therefore they're tree-like, but they're not exactly trees, and that's why they hold a middle status. Right? Where depending on how you spread them out, they could be treated as trees, young saplings, or like tfu'a. If you look at the Rosh Cirilio, how does he read it? He says, V'tosefta garaz nidone kineti ave Rosh Hashanah. V'nir dohachi kamar kistei tfu'a, d'lo b'inan b'hum mefuzarot kelchatan v'lo pligei. So what do we have? We have the Pnei Moshe who changes the girsa in the Tosefta to say that they're always like Tvua. We have the Marafulda who doesn't change the girsa in the Tosefta and says the Yerushalmi and the Tosefta are talking about two different cases. right? One where they're packed into a space of one sa'a, one when they're packed into two sa'a. If it's in two sa'a, right, that's the marfolda. Right? The Rosh really has a third parish, which is? Is that? Nope. Is that the Braita and the Yerushalmi are telling you that it has a hybrid status. It is both like a Nitya and like a Stein Lavan. What? What is he saying? It's like a state tfuwa that there's no spacing requirements, as opposed to trees, where as we saw, it matters, right? Remember, minimum space, maximum space, remember all that? Right? Minimum is Kadesha Bakar over Bechelav, which obviously you don't need for, like, wheat, right? Think about that, right? Between two stalks of wheat, for between every two stalks of wheat, you must have the amount that oxen will walk through. That's not true, right? The spacing is totally different, minimum and maximum spacing, right? But you get till Rosh Hashanah, right? So he says, you get till Rosh Hashanah, he's saying, they're both true. You get till Rosh Hashanah, but there's no spacing requirements. Right? And then he says, Bisatayim shanu depar meitzayim lo chashiv stekanim. But, what does satayim mean? Yeah. It needs to be two, you need two sa'a worth. He says, as long as you have two sa'a worth.
What is this requirement that they're fulfilling, that they can be planned for Rosh?
Because that's how much work it needs. It needs constant work, but it doesn't need spacing requirements. But it does need two sa'a. Meaning two, right? In order for it to be a field. That's when it's considered a field, when you have two sa'a worth. Or the agriculture, I mean, it could be either, right? Meaning, I don't know. What do you mean? When it's that big, that's when it starts requiring that type of work. I don't know.
Wait, so
do I grow weeds? I don't know. Right? Yes. Right? So you see, you have three, just in the Mefarshim on the page, you have three different pshatim, right? Which is, it's like Rosh Cirilio, don't change the girsa, just say they're talking about different aspects, right? When you say it's an Isiyah, you mean it's until Rosh Hashanah. When you say it's like a Stei Lavan, it means that, right, you need to,
no
right, it doesn't have the spacing requirement, right? But it does have a requirement, which is you only start kicking in the school when you hit Satayim rather than Sa'ah, right? That's the Rosh Cirilio, right? According to Rabbi Avo, which he thinks is what it means, the Pnei Moshe changes the gears on the Tosefta to say that it's treated entirely like a Stei Lavan, a Stei Tshuva, a Stei Lavan, and that's true even if it has Satayim, right? Even if it spreads to Satayim, and then Rav Folda says, no, they're talking about different issues. Right? It's a stay, it depends how they're spaced. If they're packed together, so then they're like nitziot, and you get to Rosh Hashanah. And if they're not packed together, they're spread in satayim. Right? So what is he really saying? That line in the Yerushalmi is explaining why it's different than the Tosefta.
But if you're going to say it's a hybrid opinion, don't you mean wouldn't it make sense there are two equal sources?
He thinks that they're presenting two angles. It's like a Nitya and it's like a Stei Lavan.
But it's the same Tosefta, just one of the ways it was quoted. So what?
Ah, well, that's obviously the problem, right? Is, right? I mean, look, what I want you to walk away from this is as follows, right? Is that the Yerushalmi is based on the Tosefta, and very heavily. So when you have a stira between the Tosefta and the Yerushalmi, you have three options, right? Well, four options, right? One is to say, I don't care, right? They just say different things. It's a machloket, right? But then if you want to read the Yerushalmi, right? The same as we have in Bavli, right? You have three options when you're reading the Tosefta and the Yerushalmi together. What are the three options? Change the girsa in the Yerushalmi, change the girsa in the Tosefta,
or make a hybrid opinion.
So the Pnei Moshe changes the girsa in the Tosefta, the Rav Folda changes explanation, right? But they're all basically influenced by the Tosefta. Now, in general, if you ever want to look up the Tosefta, this is an important thing to know, and it has now been added to Svaria, so this is very helpful. Okay? If you go on Svaria, you will discover that there are two versions of the Tosefta. This is just a slight skill for you to know, right? There are two gears of the Tosefta. There's the standard version that it'll give you, and then it'll give you the Lieberman version of the Tosefta, okay? So who was Shaul Lieberman? So, Shaul Lieberman was a very important academic scholar, yes. He was also a huge Talmud Chacham, and he was the head of, correct, and he was basically he was in JTS, right? In his own practice, he was mostly what we would probably call nowadays Orthodox, right? But in terms of affiliation, with the exception of his minyan, which did not have machisa, a separate seating, but no machisa, right? Upbringing was very classic European, right? European yeshivot. He was friends with a lot of people. His cousins with the Chazon Ish, right? Massive Talmud Chacham. So at some point in his life, he wanted to write an academic treatment of the Yerushalmi, which he did on some Masechta, or maybe only one Masechta, I think. However, there was a problem, is that he realized that at some point you can't really write an academic treatment of the Yerushalmi until you've done what first? Right. And then, you know, by the time he finished his magnum opus on the Tosefta, he did not have time to finish one of the Yerushalmi before he died. Okay? So if you look on Svaria, you'll get two things, right? One thing that you'll get is his academic Girsa of the Tosefta, that's the Lieberman Tosefta, but then you'll get his commentary on the Tosefta, and that is? No, what is it called? Tosefta Kipshuta. And what is it? It is a treatment of all the variants, but also?
Also a quintessence.
Yes, and since he knew everything about everything, it is, you will find any source that you ever wanted on every related sugya in the Bavli, Rishonim, Rishonim, Achronim, right? Latin, Greek, whatever commentaries on it, anything you could ever imagine is there. It's a terrifying feat. What? Anything that has ever been written, he knew, in any language. It was crazy. It's insane. I cannot explain to you how intimidating it is to read anything in Tosefta Kipshuta. Who knows? I don't speak Latin. Okay. Why is the internet is just not strong enough here? Is someone having strong enough internet to? Did I get it? Lieberman Tosefta. Sukramandal? What do you want, Sukramandal?
The other academic Tosefta, and I think it's called the Horowitz edition.
The what?
The Horowitz one, you know, the other one about Horowitz?
Yeah, there is a Horowitz on some, I think. I don't, you know.
Okay, I
remember
thinking the Lieberman Tosefta doesn't cover all of the Tosefta.
All right. One second. Okay, I'm trying to pull it up. But you'll see that he treats it. One second. Now there's another problem with the Mara Fulda, though, while I'm trying to pull this up, right, with the footnote notes. What does it note? You want to read the Chilufei Gersot? Well, go under Tosefta. Okay, while I'm pulling it up.
Oh, Lieberman edition, Vilna edition. Okay.
Right, then press it and go to commentary. So do you want to read this? You want to read the Chilu figure out? Here, you can read it. While we're plugging up here. You read it. Go.
Okay. Marafolda states the field container fewer than 10 reeds is comparable to a field of grain. The Marafolda is difficult to understand because reeds are essentially like saplings, as is evident from the requirement that 10 be present in order to permit plowing the entire base up. But then even if there are fewer than 10 reeds per base stock, plowing their immediate vicinity should be permitted even until Shavuos, as is the case with saplings. Why then does the Braisa cited in the Gemara compare a field of reeds to a field of grain, where no plowing at all is permitted after Pesach? The problem is avoided by Rosh Aurelio, who explains that the Braisa cited in the Gemara compares reeds to grain, only in the sense that, unlike saplings, reeds do not have to be distributed evenly throughout the field. Even if the 10 reeds are close together, one may still plow the entire field on their account. In most other respects, though, reeds are indeed like saplings. Thus, if fewer than 10 reeds are present, their immediate vicinity may indeed be plowed up until Shavuos. According to this approach, Rav Yosef bar Rav Chanina comment that the Braisa speaks of two batesa has nothing to do with explaining the Braisa's comparison between reeds and grain. Rather, Rav Yosef bar Rav Chanina has received as a tradition from his teacher that a field of reeds may be plowed in its entirety only if it covers two batesa.
Okay, good. Now, I'll read you Lieberman, right? So Lieberman quotes the Tosefta, right? He has the Tosefta, and he has this Rishalmi, it says, Nidonim Kisei Shvua. So he says, Uvirash Cirilio, he had a Tosefta, he said, the hardest of all the Tevrushim, he thinks, is which one? The Rosh Cirilio. Because the Rosh Cirilio does not try to change the Girsa. He just says that the line of the Yerushalmi and the line of the Tosefta that sound like opposites are really the same.
Okay.
And he said, that's weird. Which I think is what Mordecai said. That's weird, right? Why would you take the exact same line, say the opposite, and not just say Tamachloke, right? Or whatever. Avel Yerushalmi atzmomra l'braita, but Lieberman says, wait a second. There's a very easy way to read this, which is, what is really the Marafolda getting at, the Satayim Shanu? He's saying that what's implied, and this is what I want you to walk away methodologically, I know it's confusing. The Yerushalmi knows that what? The Yerushalmi assumes that what? You know the Tosefta. And therefore, the way Lieberman's reading and the Marafolda reads it is, you already realize the contradiction. The Satayim Shanu is coming to do what? To explain how it's not in contradiction because they're talking about different scenarios. But you wouldn't understand the Yerushalmi unless you realize that the Yerushalmi expects you to be going through this process of saying, wait, how does this line work with the Tosefta says the opposite? Answer, that's talking to Satayim. That's talking to Satayim. Because he's saying, where's Rabbi Avo coming out and saying, Misatayim Shanu? What he's doing is saying... What? Correct. Now why does it matter? So then Lieberman suggests, why should it matter? He says, the kanim shlo nitu al menat shitaveh ageza b'lehem, u'memelech shil choresh, or imuchach shil mkaven lavod ha'aret. U'lefichach din sadeh kanim kisei tzvua, ve'ino choresh, ela ad ha-pesach. So he says, what's the logic, right, that really drives this Gemara? So he says, well, it goes like this. Right, this is Kobe's question, which is why are we even talking about reeds? So the answer is because if you're going to use the reeds for the, right, you're going to let them grow to become thick, right, so then what is their fruit? Is the trunk, right? So here's how he understands it. He says, listen, if you pack them together in one sa'a, then are they going to be able to grow thick?
No.
So then, if you're working in the field, what does that show? You're doing it for the land. You can't possibly be doing it for the reeds because the only reason you would use reeds is to let them grow big and thick. But if you pack them too much together into one sa'a, then
they
won't be able to do that. If you can't do that, then that shows that you're not plowing for them. If you're not plowing for them, then what are you doing? Plowing the land. And what have we established? What's the rule? That what you need to do during Tosefta Shviit is make it clear that you're only working for the fruit and not for the land. So when it says v'satayim shana, what it's saying is if you let them spread out such that they can grow big and strong, then
you're letting them spread out.
So then you're obviously fine for them.
Ah, if you're spreading them out, it shows that you're plowing them because you actually want them to grow big. But if you stuff them together, right, it's one thing when there's fruit or there's produce, because then you're packing them together to get as much fruit as you want, and therefore the standards are different. But when the fruit is the girth of the thing itself, right, and you pack them together, it's not going to produce what you need. And therefore, why is it that we treat it like Shtei Lavan, but you need more of it, you need it more spread out? Because you need to show that you actually want it to grow and you're working for its growth.
That's the same event. That means that you can't plow it at all.
So he's saying that's the difference. He's saying, he reads it like the Marafulda, that it's like a Nitziah if... Right? The way he reads it is, Right, and when you don't plant it in a way, right?
That it's going to be beneficial to plant the reeds after.
If you do it in such a way that it's not going to be beneficial for the reeds, then you have to stop at Pesach. If you're doing it in a way that it's beneficial for the reeds, right, then you can go until Rosh Hashanah. Right, now he says, Hashem gave the kanim shem adlim alim alim yon kerachot. Second.
This is in the
Marabolda? No, this is in Lieberman.
No, I'm saying he wants to go with Marabolda.
Similar to the Marabolda, not exactly. One second. Let me get this right. No, that's right. Meaning it's the opposite, but he's doing it right. Meaning he's saying it's right. It's the opposite of Marabolda. He's saying exactly. Right, that makes more sense. Right? It's treated like Nitziot if you spread it out in Satanyam. Right?
It's so weird. It's a contradiction.
No. If you spread it out...
Because we say based off, but it's the standard. It works that way for...
Exactly. Right? It's here...
How did he read it?
The way he reads in the Gemara is... Sadeh kanim nidonim kesei tu'ah. Right? Meaning it's like tu'ah if you pack it together. But what is you Tosefta talking about? Right? Right? It's an implied question. Bisatayim. I think that's how he's going to read it.
Okay.
Yes, it is confusing. I knew it was confusing.
Now,
like,
this is the stuff that keeps me awake.
Great.
Wait, no, he's saying so that
right. Okay. Hayasuyud kishura, if it's in one line, let ha daplig al Shmuel, doesn't this argue on Shmuel, the Shmuel Amar, be'asuyin shura, right? So we saw this already earlier, right? That he said that it is called a Shtei Lavan, right? So if you remember, we did this much earlier, right? That, right, our Mishnah says that if it's all in one line, you can only plow the line and not the whole field. Except we learned earlier that Rav was the one who said it needed to be triangulated,
yeah,
and Shmuel said even in a line. Doesn't this contradict him?
But that Shmuel, one was talking about Nitzio, it's almost talking about mature trees, though, which is comparable.
So he says, so then the Gemara answers, Taman Ayidei Shein Mefuzarot B'toch Beitza Atroe Ota Ki'ilu Mileya Bram Hacha Kulan Nitzanin B'makom Echad. So he says, right, this is the way the Rosh Hashanah understands it is exactly like Josh says. So that the difference comes down to the fact that we're dealing with what?
That we're dealing now with Nitziot.
With Nitziot, exactly. With Nitziot, with young trees, which without a lot of branches, then he agrees that they need to be spread out. Why?
No, that's not right over there.
Right?
Oh,
right? Right? He's saying, right, the way he reads it is, that it's, right, by, when does Shmuel say that they can be in one line, you can plow the entire field?
By
skeinot. Why? Because they're big.
They're
right, so even if they're all in one spot, they're big. So you look at it and you say, that's a field. But if you have a bunch of saplings, and they're all in one line, then you look at it and you say, that's not a field.
But there's still 10 of them.
Correct. But he says by nitiot, right, in order for it to look like a field, those 10 need to be spread out. Right? But by skeinot, which are big.
Are you saying that Shmuel was saying in the case of the chaos, they weren't spread out?
Correct. Right? By when there's skeinot, he doesn't think they need to be spread out. When they're nitiot, he thinks they do, right? That's the Rosh Hashanah solution.
Based on how you do it, right? Not agricultural.
Right? Yes. That's the way the Rosh Derilio, correct. And it's based on how you view it, correct.
Yeah, but then when you see the trees, when they're like borderline...
good, so you don't like it. So the Marafol does a different shot. What does he say? No, there's two types of shurot. There's shura and shura kichoma. Remember we saw this earlier. There's stuff together shura and there's in a line, but spread out. And the way he says it is, no. This is how it goes. Shmuel says they can be in a straight line. That type of shura is good. Here we're talking about shura b'kechoma, and that's not good. How does he get that from the Gemara? Because he says, what does the Yerushalmi say? Hacha kulam nitunim b'makom echad. Right, he's saying it's true, they both use the word shura, but they mean different things. The shura that doesn't work is where they're bimakom echad. If they're in one place, they're stuffed together, three together, then that doesn't work according to anybody.
How is that different
than
the other understanding?
Very simple, right? Are the markers still here?
The first understanding we have is that
no, I'll show you. One second. Okay, so let's go through the different possibilities here, okay? So let's start with the Rosh Derilio, okay? The Rosh Derilio says that here's our field, and he says it depends. If you have big trees, right, so then Rabo, you still need them to be
triangular,
right? This is Rabo,
yes?
Shmuel holds that when it comes to these, they can still be in one place. But when do we say that Kishura doesn't work? When you have Nisio. Right? Nisio, because they're so small,
they can't constitute a field.
Right? They need to be spread out to count as a field. Right? And yes, the seeming logic to this is?
There's fluffier, like the
So at least the Rosh really seems to think that it's about perception.
Have you read that?
Right, about Nira? Right?
Have you read that in the Quran?
So he says, the way he reads it is Haman by Nitiot, which is really haha, right? You have, it only looks full when they're like this, right? When they're big, right? Then it looks like a field even with three. That's the Rosh Terilio. Yes? Fine. Marafolda says, no. It's very simple. There are three constructs. Okay? Doesn't matter size. Is there a napkin or something? So he says, no, you got it wrong. Right? The key here is to understand that the word shura can mean two different things, okay? There's three constructs. Oh. Right? He says, Rav holds they need to be triangulated. Right? That's clear. But the ambiguous term here is shura. Shura can mean one of two things. It can either mean a line, simply a line, right? Or it can mean shura kechoma, which is stuffed together. And he says, Shmuel holds that shura kechoma is bad, right? I mean, he doesn't think it needs to be triangulated, but he does think it needs to be spread out and not stuffed together. So the way he reads it is Haman. Now look at the Gemara. How does he read it? Haman a yidei shehin befuzarot bitov beitzah roat akilu milayah. It's actually a very nice read. What does he say?
They're
in a line, but they're spread out, and therefore it's considered
full. So
who's
understanding Hindus on what they think
Shalom means? Correct. Exactly. Baram Hacha raises there, it's spread out, even though it's in a line. Baram Hacha, but here, I, right? Kulan, if you need them, they're all in one place. Right?
At what point is it too close together?
Kishura, whatever that means. Okay? Well, it seems to be different than that, right? Because it's that much, everyone agrees that it's just dead. Okay? So this is the Marafolda. Okay? Now, Pnei Moshe has two pshatim. Right? So if you look at the Pnei Moshe, first he says, Rosh Terilio. Right? If you look at the Pnei Moshe, so he says, in his first his first one is like the Rosh Terilio. The difference is between, right, Skeno and Nitiyo. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's the first shot. But then if you look towards the end, he says, Inami, the high hacha, siyuma de milta, the time of my needs in you. Koma, the dafka mufuzarot ataroe, aval hacha basyut kishura, heve ki ilun zunuman gomachad, the eno nikarsh vishvilan hu choresh, la besa, vishayim imagin be shirkin, vahainu ha de amaran. The second shot, well, actually, you know what? The second shot is the same thing, but he gets it in a different linguistically confusing way, so I won't try to explain how he does it. The shot comes out the same, but it is, but how he reads it is different. Yeah. Now, how close do they have to be? So the Ziv HaYam assumes that this is only if it's less than 4 amot. Okay? The only time this is a problem is if this is less than 4 amot.
So it's between the amount of the ox and the cart?
Yeah.
Not that much.
Yeah, I don't know how much that is exactly. Okay? Fine. Ugh. Yalla. Okay, let's do a few more minutes. What time is it? Yeah, let's do a few minutes. Fine. Okay, next Mishnah. Hanitiot v'haduluin mitstarfin. Yeah, I want to at least get you started on this, and then hopefully we can finish this soon. Maybe we can finish tomorrow. Look at that. Hanitiot v'haduluin mitstarfin. So the nitiot can be included with diluin. What's diluin? Gourds. Right, gourds, not pumpkins. I mean, modern Hebrew is pumpkin, but then it's more generically gourds. L'tok beitzah. Rushuman Gamliel Omer, Asarat Diluin Latok Beitzah, Harshin Kol Beitzah, Rosh Hashanah. Rushuman Gamliel goes farther and says, even 10 Diluin work. At Eimatai, now, what I want you to do, what you're going to see tomorrow is that, like we had today in the Tosefta nightmare, you have the same thing because you'll see in the Tosefta, Diluin, I want you to look at the Tosefta tomorrow, okay? Open it up on Sfaria, on the Lieberman edition. It's, I think, Aleph Dalet, I think, Aleph Gimel or Aleph Dalet in Tosefta. Look at the Girsa there, right, and read the Lieberman on it, okay?
Are Gourds allowed to be fruits?
No. Because what you're going to see there is it's going to distinguish between different type of diluin, and what you're going to see is that the Gemara is going to distinguish how many diluin can be there, right, and distinguish between diluin from Mitzrayim and from Yavan, right, and this gets very complicated. Part of it is going to come down to this Mishnah. Already in the Mishnah there's a problem, right, which is, do you think that, right, in what ways is Shimon ben Gamliel arguing on the Tanakhama? What does it sound like? The Tanakhama says...
I don't know what the premise of the argument is.
Oh, good. It's not even clear what they're arguing about. So at first glance, what does it sound like? That the Tanakhama says that you can... If you have Nisio plus Diluin, so...
That it
wouldn't
make some difference the fact that you're going to choose.
But you can still, right, treat it like in, meaning give it to Rosh Hashanah. According to Shimon ben Gamliel, what do you have to do? You can, sorry.
We'll
work backwards. Simple charge, according to Shimon Gamliel, even all 10 of them are like Nitiot. According to the Tanakhama, they can be mashlim. Meaning if you have Nitiot and some Diluin, then it could be a Diluin, but not by themselves. Right? Now, which of those svaras make sense? Rishon ben Gamliel, because he just says, listen, for whatever reason, the blood is like a Nitiot. What? They don't need to mix.
They feel that they're allowed to.
Yeah, presumably he says they can mix, they don't need to, because even 10 diluin would work. What's the problem? Is that, according to Tanakhama, do we know how many nitiot you need to suddenly be allowed to count the last?
No,
we have no idea. Very good. That's what you're going to see tomorrow in the Gemara.
How do you know that you can find them?
Good, that's what you're going to have to figure out tomorrow. Very good.
He didn't say
you're right. That's it. All those questions, that's what I want you to think about for tomorrow. I just want to set you up with it, right? So read the Tosefta. That's the first half of the Tosefta and the first half of the Gemara. The next part of the mission is Aimadai Nikru Nitiot. Relazar ben Azariah Machia Cholu. Until what point do they call Nitiot? Until they become Chulen. Which is, well, we'll see. Fourth year or fifth year, right? Right? And then we'll see there's a machloket, whether it means until they have the potential to become kol, meaning year four, until you actually redeem them.
That makes it even harder,
though,
for sure.
Yes, it does. But you're allowed to redeem them in year four, right? Rabbi Shua, good, very complicated, that's what you have to do. Rabbi Shua Omer, Bat Sheva Shanim for 7 years, Rabbi Kiva Omer Nitiya Kishma. Something is considered a nitiyah as long as people refer to it as a nitiyah. And there's a further machloket we've shown him, which is that objective or subjective?
Yeah.
Meaning, does nitiyah kishma mean if you happen to call it, or is he saying everybody knows that we only call something a nitiyah for a certain amount of time? which is a machloket Rambam and Rash. That's a machloket Rambam and Rash. Good.
Based on like what people call it.
Very good. Machloket Rambam and Rash. This we're gonna have to see tomorrow. Good. Ilan shenigam shenigmam votu chalibin. Right. This I'll just read the last case. If you cut down a tree, right, and now it regrows. So mitefach ulemata on tinitia. If you cut it to less than a tefach from the ground, you treat it as a new growth, as a nitia, right? You take a tree, you cut it down to a stump, and now it starts regrowing. So, if you cut it with less than a tefach of the ground, then the new growth has all the halachot of a nitia. Mitefach ulemala ti'ilan. But if it's higher than a tefach, then it's a tree. Dibrei Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon. That's according to Rabbi Shimon. No.
No, only reference to a stump.
Now, the questions you have, good. So the questions you have to deal with is, in the Rishonim now they divide the three questions. The first one tries to figure out what type of dilat it is, and you'll see between the Tosefta and the Mefarshim here, right? No one agrees what's going on. What type of dilat? How many nitiot? How many dilat? What type of dilat? All that, right?
Somebody mean a different opinion usually, like he's arguing.
Yes.
So, I mean, argue that, why can't you say another opinion of what is the difference between a Tia and Elon? That one's more than a Tia is considered a Elon, and what's less than a Tia is considered a Tia.
Say that again?
Why can't you say that he's arguing on the definition of a Tia versus a Elon?
No. No one's arguing on the definition of a Tia. They're arguing about a tree that's cut down. At what point it becomes defined as a new tree, where the regrowth is considered a new tree.
Nobody's arguing with him on that.
What do you think the Yerushalm is going to do?
Bring somebody to argue.
Of course it is. Right, and what you'll see is, just to set you up for this, is that this is the end of the Yerushalm, and I'm going to bet it's going to say, okay, someone argues on him, but here's what's important to know. Is there seems to be a parallel machloket by Arla. What's Arla? Good, right? Within the first 3 years of a tree, right? Whatever it produces is Asur. The fourth year is Netzer Avai. Exactly. And then the fifth year is regular Chulin. So in Arla we have the same machloket, which is what happens if you take this plant, this tree, and what do? This tree, and you cut it all the way down. So now, do you restart the count? Or not. And there you have a similar machloket, which is there is a point at which you cut it so low that it's now considered like a new tree, but the question is how much? One sheet is going to say past the tefach, and what do you think take a guess what the other sheet says? All the way to the ground. Right? As long as anything is left is considered the old one. Right? And here's what you need to notice, is that in the Yerushalmi it seems to be that the Yerushalmi says that those are parallel machlokot, right? But the Rambam paskins one way in Arla and one way in Shvi'it, right? Which forces you to ask what exactly does it mean when the Yerushalmi equates them. Okay? Those are the three units left in this perek, and then we're done. And then we will definitely move to a topic, right? Which is the topic I want to do is Shemitah. Now it is Daraita Darabanan, but you will have Rabbi Wasserman for 2 days before that who will give whatever he wants, right? Those are the three questions you have to deal with in the Yerushalmi. Hopefully we'll finish it. We'll either finish tomorrow, worst comes to worst, Sunday before I fly, right? But we will be done. We'll finish the first parak, Shkoya. Maybe when we get back, we'll throw a siyum, right? Regensburg used to do this when he would like finish like a big sugya that was really, really hard. He would like take everyone out for breakfast at the mall. I'll ask him if I can do that when I get back, because this deserves it, because you guys have been troopers.
But according to our mission, yes. The way that he said